All right, hello again, and welcome to Supergirl Gab, the show where we watch Supergirl, and then we talk about it. Gab, if you will. I'm Chris.
I'm Katie. I did it better this time.
You did it better this time. Plus, if there's ever too much of a gap, I can just cut it down, and then it'll sound like you were just right on top of it.
Yeah, I will sound super great.
Yeah, and speaking of super, we are your super friends that watch Supergirl and then gab with you about it. So this week, we are watching Season 2, Episode 19, and the episode is called Alex. And boy, this was quite an episode.
Yeah. So the funny thing about this episode is I got home a little later last night because I had a doctor's appointment, and then I decided to get food after. So I was waiting for the red line in Chicago when I was looking at my phone, and I saw like a tiny little GIF that the Supergirl writers had actually posted. And I said to my boyfriend, "Oh, the lesbian survived," and then we high-fived. So I went into this episode knowing, because like I thought that there was a chance. There was a chance they were going to do it.
My
only reasoning is because it was right before the end of the season. I didn't think they were either, because they were doing really well. But I thought like maybe a 15% chance that they were going to do something not recommendable and kill off not only one of the better developed characters this season, but also the like, hey, look at our queer representation.
Yeah, I think they're like way too invested in the two of them, the relationship, not just in how much work they've done on Alex this season. Because, you know, I certainly liked her in the first season, but it was not like she was a character with just a ton of depth. You know, she's basically just there to be Supergirl's sister and backup.
I felt like there was a little, like, I liked the fact that she was incredibly flawed and that they still had her be a character that was loved by the heroine in a way that felt genuine. But I mean, there was a lot of like walls to her, like that was part of her thing. So it made sense that you didn't know that there was still a lot that wasn't explored there.
Do you think that they already knew in the first season where they were planning on going with her in the second season? Because I do not.
I don't think, my feeling is that when they got the criticism that there wasn't any queer representation and like, hey, maybe this is a thing that you should have with not necessarily so many women, because obviously there are queer men out in the world, but hey, there are a lot of straight people on the show. I think that they, my instinct, and I don't have any insight into this, so I'm pulling this completely out of my butt, is that they saw the opportunity for there to be something with Alex, because somewhat I saw people actually headcanon her as queer in season one. So, and I think that there's something, I'm of the opinion in comics, TV, et cetera, you know, movies, series, et cetera, that, that deciding to have a character be queer once you're in the middle of writing that character, like once you have something out in the world about that character already, is not necessarily a bad thing. Like there's this idea that you have that they have to be sacredly the same as when you first wrote them. And I don't really subscribe to that. So, but yeah, my instinct on it is that they were like, okay, we want queer characters in season two. And they didn't just want to add in new queer characters, which they have done with Maggie. But I think that they just saw an opportunity for a character that some people are already headcanoning as being gay and going like, well, why don't we just do it? Because there are people who realize that later in life, which we've talked about in the recaps. So yeah, sorry, that was a long explanation. My thinking is that this is something they came up with over the summer as they were planning out season two, and it just made sense.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think that Alex's character was really, her personality beyond Kara was enough of a blank slate that it was easy. It would be easy for them to just go like, oh yeah, this would make sense. This would fit. And of course, we've talked endlessly about what a good job they've done with it. So all of that is to say, I did not ever think that she was in any real trouble. Though I will say that there was at least, you know, 2 points in the episode where I was like, man, this is intense.
Yeah, like, it really is. But like I said, I was lucky because I don't like a ton of tension. Like I get very anxious, like in my full life as a human being, but also as like a viewer of things, which is why like there are certain things that just came out, like, oh, I don't know, a Hulu series.
That, oh my gosh, I was just about to mention that.
I cannot. Well, I said it on Twitter. I was like, look, I know it's super important. You guys know I talk about these topics all the time. I cannot watch A Handmaid's Tale. I can't do it. And I've seen other people go like, want, or like either have watched a show and go like, that is totally valid. And I've had other people go like, I am 100% the same way. Cause I can't watch that right now. And
can't deal with it when it feels too real.
Yeah. It's real rough. In general, it's like super, super intense and like super irrelevant and stuff. So that wasn't so bad here, but it was very nice for me to have even like my, I had that like maybe 10-15% where I was like, oh, they could do this cause it's towards the end of the season. And I was happy that that like tiny little 10-15% got pushed aside and I could watch the episode knowing 100% that she was going to be fine. So I could still enjoy it as something that I knew was actually really shot to be really intense and powerful without actually being like being too nervous for the characters involved. So that was a nice thing that I didn't have to worry about. But yeah, I did that high five actually did happen. Where I was like, yes, I don't have to worry about that tonight. I think we've kind of walked around it in this beginning to the podcast episode. But this one was, again, a really solid later episode in the series. I mean, at least for me. I don't know. I haven't asked you yet what you thought. But I don't want to presume. But I thought that there was a lot here. Again, we talked last episode about the plot benefiting character growth. And this was another, or like, at least character relationships and like benefiting the characters. And this felt like both that and also pushing forward towards the end of the season. There's like the plot has clearly developed. There's some like, and again, there's just some really, really good character moments in here. I was really pleased with, especially again, since the synopsis, when I first heard about this, I was like, oh, this doesn't sound like an episode I'm going to like. And I ended up liking it a whole lot.
Well, I think the thing we see in these shows is that these back half episodes start to have some of that feeling like more solid or feeling like they just do a better job because you see some of that. It feels like, okay, we don't have to tread any more water to get to the end of the season to have our 23 episodes, 24, whatever.
Yeah.
And it's like you can go, okay, let's do some stuff that moves the plot forward. And continues these people's stories as opposed to just go like, well, we can't do anything too big yet because we're not exactly sure if we're going to get this, if the season's going to get, you know, if we're going to get renewed, or we're not sure if we're going to be able to get Superman back for the end of the season, or, you know, and I guess that's kind of just something you have to roll with television that's done, you know, in this manner.
Like this,
but
yeah.
Yeah. And it's, you know, you go, well, maybe that's just kind of the price you pay for getting a bunch of shows like this, but it, you know, on the one hand you go like, well, I would rather have this show than not have it, you know, if it's this or nothing, as you know, like it has to be done like this because that's the network it's on and that's the way it's set up, versus something like, you know, just being on Netflix and they go, oh, we can just do it in 8 episodes or whatever. So it's, you know, it's frustrating. And it, when you see these episodes that are so, they're so much stronger, it's, you know, it's easy to get frustrated by it and go like, man, I wish the whole season could be like this. But I guess, you know, as easy as it is to get frustrated by that, it's just, we kind of have to go with it. It's just the nature of how it is, unfortunately.
Yeah. Yeah. So starting with the beginning of the episode, which is a very good place to start.
Let's recap the episode a bit.
Yeah. So it starts off with Supergirl kind of getting on Maggie's, not even kind of, getting on Maggie's nerves.
Because absolutely getting on Maggie's nerves.
Yeah, which it's funny because the very first thing, got to see part of this because my boyfriend was complaining that Maggie wasn't following what he's pretty sure was like strict protocol for hostage negotiation.
Was she doing wrong?
I think she said like, she kept saying like, you have a choice. And again, I did not double check either Maggie or my boyfriend, like what he was saying, but that you don't want to give them a choice because then that makes them feel like they have to make a rash decision now. You want to try to hold off them. I don't know. And like I said, I didn't fact check him either way, but I only got to see part of it. And then I was like, Supergirl's here. So just, it doesn't matter anymore. And it's a TV show on the CW. So apparently, but yeah, so he took umbrage with that small detail. And I was seriously like, well, Supergirl's handling it now, so it doesn't matter.
Show can start. Supergirl's here.
Yeah, Supergirl's here. We're all okay. So she saves the hostages in like no time flat. And Maggie is clearly not super pleased about it, but she's holding her tongue because this is her girlfriend's sister. And then I think it immediately cuts to them in Alex's apartment. And I think it was that Alex is the one that messed up dinner this time.
Yes.
Because apparently this is a Danvers family trait. And so they get pizza. And here's the important thing about the scene is that Supergirl likes pineapple and ham pizza. And I feel vindicated for every time someone made a crack about Hawaiian pizza not being like, not being accurate. And it's delicious. And so her going pineapple and pizza just makes sense. So I'm like, thank you, Kara. Now I have evidence because the Maiden of Steel likes pineapple.
She has, to be fair, she has alien taste buds, which is why you notice only she and Mon-El are the ones eating it. So
I'm just saying, Kara likes pineapple pizza, and that I made a fist pump in the air because I was so happy. I was like, yes, a vindication for years of jokes.
You know, I'll say I don't like it all the time, but I like it sometimes. I was like, yeah, this worked. It was one of those things that I like avoided like the plague for a really long time, but because I was like, no, that's gross. But yeah, then you try it and you're like, eh, this works.
Well, and it also, we're not for me, making it's this more, a I don't pineapple want pizza podcast, but.
that's but, a different I mean, podcast we're starting.
Yeah, that's a different podcast. It will be short-lived because there's only so much I can say about it. Yeah. But I will say, I think it's also one of those things where like, it really depends on what the pizza, like if you get a really crappy pizza, of course, there's going to be crappy pineapple on it. But if you have a really good pizza with like good sauce that goes well with kind of the sweetness of the pineapple and the saltiness of the ham, then it's like, oh, then it works. So anyway.
The ham is the problem for me, not the pineapple.
You know, it really depends on like the pizza you're getting, because there can be really crappy ham on pineapple, pineapple pizza. But yeah. Anyway, that was literally.
I am into our new pizza party podcast.
See, I don't think you were part of the Comics Alliance Slack, but there was like a lot of food conversations on the on the Comic Alliance Slack.
Yeah, I found out about the Comics Alliance Slack like the day that we all got fired.
Yeah, I don't. Yeah, but which we're still doing on and off. But there's literally a channel now devoted to like food stuff. So well, it's fun. Mostly Leesk. Like if you know James Leesk,
oh Lord, yes.
Oh my gosh, that was like I think at least 75% of the arguments we had was because he threw in a controversial opinion on one thing.
He's
or another
got some kind of weird food some kind of weird food ideas.
Yeah. Anyway, so again, outside of the pizza thing, but it was literally the first note I made on the Swerve doc I wrote up for my notes of the episode is like, I feel vindicated by this.
Well, that's exciting. That's yeah. Fun.
So outside of the delicious pizza they're enjoying,
this is making me so hungry for
I'm so
pizza
sorry.
Now. It's
yeah.
ridiculous.
This
was a mistake.
Now we gotta get through it so you can.
So I can order pizza. Yeah.
Yeah. So after, while they're enjoying their food, Kara and Maggie have a not so subtly tense discussion, quote unquote, about Supergirl's role in justice in the city. And Maggie makes some good points. I mean,
that's exactly what I was about to say. Yeah,
I mean,
Maggie, it's like, as much as I love Supergirl, Maggie definitely does have a point. When
I mean,
it comes to just like regular crime.
Yeah, a lot of these points are the ones that if there's a Bat family at all ever in this series, which I'm still wondering if that's going to happen, which is another topic, but it's something that has, especially for like the Batman mythos, has been a major thing, but it certainly applies to Supergirl as well. Is like, yeah, there are rules to like like law enforcement, and granted, like, I mean, we could also have a discussion about how in the real world the police are not super great about those rules in particular ways, but at least in this case, in like in the world of Supergirl, what Maggie's trying to do, she's like, you kind of make it really hard for us to keep criminals in because you use an excessive amount of force by like definition. And also you swoop in and mess up what we're trying to do. And Kara is like, but I'm helping people. And it's like, yeah, I know. But and that would be super great when you're fighting like aliens that are outside of that jurisdiction or saving people. Like, we totally want you to do that. But also you're messing things up. And again, this is one of the big conversations that happened when we discuss vigilante heroes in fiction and it met like within the worlds. These are conversations that are had. So it's like, it's good that they're having them finally. Cause I was wondering if that was going to happen, with Maggie. And again, like, she makes really valid points, even though we're on Kara's side, obviously Maggie's not wrong.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Supergirl's not, you know, you don't want to say that Supergirl is wrong, but it's like, you know, it's maybe a little bit more complicated. And, you know, sometimes it's like one of those things where you go like, all right, well, how far can we go with this and accept a world where there are people who can fly?
Yeah. Yeah. And they're certainly like, it's something that, again, it almost goes back to season one where Jimmy has a really intense conversation with Kara about the legality of holding criminals with the DEO without habeas corpus. I'm using that right. Like, in my brain, that means what I think it means. But and it's funny because you don't watch The Flash, and The Flash, especially in season one, this is just what they did. Like, they just held, and they still do that to an extent, although they're a little bit better about not like about having it be a need to contain basis. But they were just like, yep, let's just lock them away. It's like, so that's not, that's not,
yeah.
I mean, outside of the legality of it, that's also ethically unsound. And it wasn't, and it was never quite mentioned. So that's why, like, last season with Supergirl, again, it was another one where it's like, so is someone going to bring up that this is kind of not okay? And then, of course, Jimmy does, and it works, because, like, again, it, and that's the thing, if you can have, you can have Kara do bad things and, like, and iffy things, as long as she's, is framed as someone else act, like, actively, not just, like, having a comment and, like, having it dropped, but, like, actively pointing out, no, this, yeah, this isn't good, and then, yeah, having her recognize it, which is,
yeah.
Yeah.
As long as, I think it's like with, as long as Supergirl can mess up however you want, as long as it's like something that then she learns from.
Yeah.
Like that's the journey we're on with her, is it's like, I mean, even though they've mostly, for most of the superhero type stuff, we're kind of past that stage for her, but it's like, that's kind of the beauty of the character and the way they've set this up, is that it's like all of, there's so much that's still new to her, or that could still be, like, completely a foreign thing to her. And we get to watch her have those formative experiences where it's like, oh, okay, now this is why she doesn't do that. Or now this is why she understands this, or blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. And I think it's, it says something about the, 'cause I think neither of us have said this, by the way, I don't want to imply this is something that I'm saying you have said, because I know we're on the same page. But yeah, there are a lot of comments sometimes about superheroes, and particularly, like, I've seen this with Superman recently, that, like, oh, well, why, like, he doesn't look up to, like, someone literally this week was trying to say that Lois Lane was not Superman's hero because Superman's already a hero and Lois doesn't have powers, which I'm like, wow, you have no...
Yeah.
Freaking. And he was saying this, by the way, to people who have written Superman and, like, Lois Lane. And, like, I saw this happen on Twitter. It was ridiculous. Because the internet is ridiculous. But
it really is. The nerve that people can show when they're dealing with people who are, like, clearly, you know, have been paid for their understanding of characters.
Yeah.
And the, oh boy.
Yeah. But there's something I think to be said. And again, I could say, like, a billion things about Lois Lane. We'll get there. We will have time, to talk about some of these, like, side characters. But I think there's something to be said about, for both Kara and Clark, for the human characters that make up their mythos, particularly, I mean, the Kents are big, obviously, but the Daily Planet people and Lois in particular, and Jimmy with Kara, but also Jimmy with Clark, is the fact that they ground them, but they ground them in, like, an important way and give them framing for everything that they do.
Yeah.
And this is important for all superheroes, to have characters. I really believe this, that to have characters that remind them and bring them back to Earth and remind them of the human element of why they do what they do, which I don't think is something that all superhero fans kind of get. But I feel like with Supergirl in particular, they've done a really good job of not having her be isolated from those people, to have for her to be open and connected with them and have them know about who she is and everything. And yep, it allows for these conversations to happen in a way that doesn't feel like, I mean, as much as I loved Kat, she was the one who was telling Kara these things, but outside of, I mean, sometimes it was literally just the writers going, okay, she needs to learn a lesson from Kat. I don't know why Kat's telling her this as Kara, but it needed to happen. So we're going to have Kat rant to her about the thing of the day.
Well, that does kind of get back to that thing of us always kind of, you know, you're always kind of questioning, like, does Kat know? Is she just letting, letting Kara believe that she doesn't know. Did she buy that time when the two of them were together? You know, as smart as Kat is, that was always kind of like a running thing of like, does she know or does she not?
Yeah. But anyway, but the nice thing about this season has been that there have been a lot of people in Kara's life, Maggie included, that we get to see them actually directly talk to her about what's going on with her as a superhero. Yeah. And then, like I said, and in this case, it was Kara Sormel. We also haven't talked about the fact that Mon-El says something boneheaded, and is like his one contribution to this episode was basically starting this argument off.
Well, you know, he was trying to brag on how great she was. He was not trying to. He had no idea that Maggie was going to be frustrated.
Oh, I know.
By
it's
the
just
situation.
Like really, you had to. you had to bring that up. It was fine. Like I said, but again, it was another one where I could close my eyes and imagine that she just brought a buddy to pizza night.
Yeah.
But yeah.
And a buddy, a very supportive buddy.
Yeah.
Very supportive, likes to brag about what a good job she does, buddy.
Yeah. Which, to be fair, like, I could see Wynn doing that as well. Like, hey, congrats to Kara. So
she did a much better job than the police, who we don't even need. Oops.
I mean, he's also like, I think it's also part of it is the whole like him being space royalty and like, and saying boneheaded things about the common folk.
Yeah.
So,
he's
okay.
Trying.
I mean, it's
he's
in
trying.
Character. It's just like, really, Mon-El? Really? Like, you couldn't have been a little more eloquent.
Yeah. I don't think tact is Mon-El's strong suit.
So after the pizza scene. Yes,
let's please stop talking about pizza.
Yeah. So Kara runs off, and Alex actually has some pretty smart moments here where she does tell Maggie, like, that was kind of not cool. She's my sister. You need to get along. But then she walks out, and Maggie thinks, like, she's leaving. Like, she's leaving because she's mad. She's like, no, I'm going to go find Kara and tell her the same thing, because you are both too stubborn and I'm not letting either of you off the hook. Which felt very even-handed and smart. It really sucks that was, like, a terrible choice. But outside of forces that she could have known about. Because there's a guy in the elevator. And again, this episode was done really well, because we, as people who know what the episode was about, could guess who that, like, guess why that guy was there. And even, like, if you'd gone to this episode without knowing what it was, you could definitely be like, okay, that guy's clearly shady, because the camera's, like, giving him just enough attention that he's not just an extra and she's noticing him, but you wouldn't know exactly what was going on. And then you don't actually see the kidnapping. So it was like, it was really well, like, oh, that's so interesting that they're doing it that way, because it builds up this suspense in like a very quiet way.
Yeah. Without being like so completely on the nose about it.
Yeah. Especially because like, we can guess that she was probably like knocked out or something, but not having to see her actually knocked out. One, it avoids seeing like a violent thing happen to like a female character, but also because she's so physically trained, it let us not like see her get taken down like super easily or like it, whatever he did to get her knocked out. We didn't have to see like her fail to get out of it, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, totally. Because, I mean, she has always seemed so super competent and, like, such a badass and such an ass kicker that it's like, you know, it kind of makes you go... I mean, there were several things in this episode where you could kind of go, like, what does this guy do that he can pull all this off? You know, that he can be ready for this and that and whatever. And you just kind of have to go, like, well... Yeah, you can nitpick that stuff, but you could also, but it's also ultimately it's not the point. And they could come up with whatever kind of reasons they want, you know, as since they left some of that stuff up to our imagination, it leaves them the room to go, if they're like, well, this is how he did it, here's the explanation, if you just have to have an explanation. But yeah, leaving it up to our imagination just lets us go, all right, that's obviously not the point. Like, let's just focus on what the story actually is.
Yeah, it fills in the blanks.
Yeah.
So I don't remember if the next scene is them finding out that that Alex is gone, or if it's the amazing Rhea Lena stuff. Do you have?
I think it's that first. Their first like little interaction.
Yeah.
And then it's when Maggie shows up at Catco. Yeah, I want to say that, well, maybe not. Honestly, I guess it doesn't ultimately matter.
Yeah, it doesn't
matter.
Really matter. Yeah, I think we're going slightly more chronological than we did in the first episode of this podcast. I want to talk about, if I can, I want to talk about Rhea and Lena. Mm-hmm. Is it Lena or Lena? Because I think I kept switching back and forth in the last episode.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's Lena.
Lena, but, okay.
But also, I've noticed that, you know, there was all last, in the first season, people kept getting Kara's name all kinds of different ways wrong.
Yeah.
And then I think somehow.
And Kat was, that was a joke.
Yeah. But there were other people that would do it. And I just would, sometimes I would go like, I think that they are just, you know, that was like this, the strongest take. And so they're just going to let it go. But I've realized, even though that bugged me last season, I know that I have called her Kara instead of Kara while we were doing this. So I guess I have to take it all back. All the times I complained about that, I have to take it back.
So
names are tricky. It's, yeah, you know, and I still cannot remember what the mom's name is. Lillian. It's Lillian.
Lillian. That sounds about right. I know it was a longer L name than like, yeah, Lex and Lena. Did I just say Lena? Which
you
one
did.
Is it?
Yeah.
Lena? I think it is Lena. That sounds right. Yeah. Anyway, so Rhea and Lena are talking, and I was so transfixed by all their scenes together, and I was like calling out what Rhea is clearly doing, because one, I'm pretty sure she picked Lena because she assumes that because she's a Luther that she'll want to hurt Supergirl. That was the underlying. But then also Rhea is like, I typed Rhea is 100% playing the surrogate mother card. And then like 30 yeah. seconds later, she said, "You're like the daughter I wish I had." And I'm like, I totally called it. It's so good. There's so many good things about the scenes together with them, because like they're both women of science, and they're both like women who see themselves as being hurt by family members. Most of what Rhea was saying, while she kept out details and obviously she fudged a few things,
yeah,
most of what she was saying though was accurate from her point of view, in terms of like
classic bad guy behavior, accurate from her point of view.
But especially like, oh, I know how you feel. My family was awful to me too. Oh, yeah. Really? What? Oh, my son. And she, there's this girl, and also my husband, like, it's very sad. He died of.
Yeah. Well, I love like, April was sitting here watching it with me for a minute while I was watching that part. And she was like, oh, and then right after that, my husband died. And it's like, yeah, because you stabbed him with a sword.
Yeah, I was like, yeah, you're leaving out a few details, but yeah, I there was that whole like, I'm sorry, what was that? Oh, nothing, just a.
Yeah, the only thing that would have been better was if she had said, like, and then my husband was murdered.
Yeah,
because like, been like, oh yeah, by me.
Yeah.
Anyway, how's your drink?
Yeah, exactly. How are you? How's your dinner going?
how are your parents?
And then there was the brilliant part where she said, "Thank the gods I found you." And yeah. Lena does that like little tick. And you're like, oh, she knows.
Yeah,
of course. Oh, she knows.
But it's also, it's not like there aren't polytheistic religions now.
Yeah. And also, I mean, at some point, maybe they'll, I'm always optimistic about them maybe bringing in like the Diana, the Mascara at some point. I mean, we didn't think they'd bring in Supergirl, and then they did, and they brought in, and they've had Superman show up, and they, you know, so
you said you didn't think
a chance.
You said we didn't think they'd bring in Supergirl, and I was like, well, the name was kind of a clue.
You know what I meant, into the Flash and everything. So like, there's always a chance, and and obviously, that side of the DC universe, but still, I feel like it's still rare enough. And she also, some other things haven't lined up either, because she just shows up out of nowhere, and like, yeah, I mean, I'm guessing that this was just another thing, but I really like that moment because it shows Lena being smart and
yeah, absolutely. Yeah, again,
she's a smart cookie in this episode.
Yeah, and I loved that you know, when she, you know, you think it's gonna go like, oh, she's saying all the right things and blah blah blah, and but then that part where she tricks her into proving that she's an alien, and then is like, all right, you can get out. I was like, yeah, Lena, you're not gonna fall for this.
Yeah.
But then more things happen.
Yeah, I do like the fact that she doesn't fall for the like surrogate mother card that we had mentioned.
Yeah.
Because I was like, oh no, you're falling for it. But that's the thing, like, she's seen these tactics against her before. And so even though I think Lena tries to think the best of people, she could tell that something else was going on.
Yeah, I think that Lena wants, I think that Lena, like, you know, is kind of inspired by Kara and by Supergirl. And she's like, she keeps wanting to believe the best in people, even though she is someone who has clearly been, you know, manipulated and screwed over so many times. But she keeps wanting to believe the best in people with the hope that people will be able to believe that she can be different. She's not just her family.
Yeah, yeah. And I think Rhea makes a good case later on in terms of, okay, yeah, I kept these things from you, but hear me out. This can do a lot of good. I mean, now she's just flat out lying. I want to go back to my home planet. I'm like, oh yeah, that's clearly what you're going to do.
She like teleports back to her spaceship at the end of that one scene.
Yeah, and also, like,
Lena should have some questions, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, there should. She should. And I like the fact that she does try to call Kara.
Yeah.
And then Kara, I think at this point, didn't the villain say, like, don't contact anyone outside the DEO? Because part of me is like, I want Kara to be like, my sister is in trouble, or my sister got kidnapped, because I think at this point Lena knows that her sister works for the DEO, but I could be wrong. I don't know if that's ever been 100% established.
She definitely knows that her sister works for some kind of government agency. She might not know that it's the DEO specifically.
But like, my sister's in trouble or something. I kind of wanted that, so that there was context to her saying, I can't talk right now.
Yeah.
I did like the fact that Lena wasn't super like affronted or like,
yeah, she was like a real person who, if your friend just goes, hey, this is not a good time, I'll call you back later,
like, oh,
you wouldn't go like, well, now I'm gonna turn my kryptonite missiles on you and get in this bio armor and blow up the world.
Yeah,
she was just like, oh, okay, you're my friend, so I'm just concerned about you.
Yeah,
and I'm gonna go, okay, I'll call you back later.
A decision. Now, granted, that's the thing. I feel for her, because I've tried contacting friends for advice and then made decisions before they can get back to me.
Did you think that they might have talked you out of, or talked you into a different one?
Yeah, or like, well, I've just decided what I'm going to decide, and I don't want to wait anymore. I don't think she was given. I don't think she was given an ultimatum from Rhea, but. She's also a very decisive person, so I'm like, I'm giving her a little slack for it. And like I said, Rhea made a decent argument after she got found out, even though this is all still very shady. But we also are seeing this from the point of view of people who know that she is shady, that she is hella shady. So, I feel like we have, and we also know the show. So even if we didn't know, even if we were coming from it where we didn't see all the other stuff she did, we know enough of the tropes of the show to know that something that this is not going to be a happy and sunshine collaboration.
Yeah. She has not had a sudden change of heart.
Yeah. No, I mean, I am assuming that it's like, I'm going to bring Daxum to Earth. I mean, that's all I can think that's going to happen. See, because that's,
I'm imagining she is going to use that teleportation thing to bring tons of kryptonite.
Oh, maybe that's, but I feel like I'm not done with this world. I don't know. It makes me feel like maybe here's the thing. I haven't watched Doctor Who in a long time, but I'm referencing it again because there's a whole thing where it was like, where they literally brought the entire planet of Gallifrey, like next door to Earth. Like the planet like was right on top of Earth because they could like zap it into our solar system.
I think that the way that they had those lines, we know that Superman's coming back, and the way that they had those lines in there about where you had Lena saying something like, oh, we could immediately transport, you know, food and water to areas, blah, blah, blah. I hope people don't think it's rude when I blah, blah, blah things. It's like, I'm just trying to get to the point.
Yeah,
unlike this show, I'm just trying to get to the point. When she, you know, all of that stuff, like, I was just like, this is going to involve, she's going to try to like beam a bunch of kryptonite to Earth to get rid of.
I mean, that feels smarter to me than like, but I'm assuming just like gobs of like armies and stuff are coming along too.
That could work.
Settlers.
Isn't everybody dead on Daxum or what happened?
They keep saying rule your people. So I assume at least a small amount of people.
Yeah.
There have to be, or else who are they going back to?
Yeah, there has to be. Yeah, there definitely has to be some people. But man, that ship is so big. You'd think that it's got to be full of enough people for like a small city.
maybe it's like that episode of The Next Generation where. Do you remember this? Where? All right, sorry. I'll go ahead and say no.
The odds are very good. I don't remember it because I've only seen.
I've only seen a handful either, but I've seen this episode twice because, like, I saw it once randomly when I was like probably in high school,
right.
And then once like last year where it just showed up. And I was like, oh, I know this episode.
But, yeah, there's like a couple episodes I feel like I've seen several times, but I haven't seen that many episodes.
There was an episode where the doctor.
Maybe this will be the one.
Yeah, the main
Dr. Crusher?
Yeah, Crusher.
Beverly Crusher?
Yes. See, you know more than me off the top of your head. But where she gets sucked into this thing where she thinks that people on the ship are disappearing in huge chunks, but then no one remembers that they're like that they exist or that their functions exist. And it ends up being just her and Picard, and she's trying to explain to him, like, isn't it weird that we're the only two people on this ship full that's supposed to have like
1,000 people?
Yeah, like 400 people. And he's like, well, we never had a problem before. Just between the two of us. It's like, no, literally, like the ship will not move unless we have certain people at spots.
Yeah. What do you think all these chairs are for?
Yeah. She makes all these points. It's just like, I don't know. It's just been the two of us because. But yeah, so that's when you said, like, how many people are in the ship? It's like, it's probably just like the five people we've seen on the deck of the ship.
Yeah. It could be. Maybe they've got it super automated. But it's like, but if that's the case, why do you need the ship to be so big? Like, what the hell?
The grandiose.
I guess,
Anyway, I feel like we've gotten way off topic again.
Yeah.
So back to pizza.
No.
So,
all right. So let's wrap up what we think of Lena and the Lena and Rhea subplot before we get into.
Well, all their scenes were delightful. So much of this. It was very the dialogue was handled really well. Those two actresses have so much chemistry with each other. See, and Carrie Hatcher is so good.
I thought they did a good job considered what they were given, but I felt like some of that dialogue was pretty clunky where I was like, I don't know if anybody would be able to deliver this and have it sound any more natural.
I only watched the episode once, so maybe I was so it could very well be that I was so delighted by the dynamic going between the two of them that I wasn't paying as much attention to the writing.
Yeah.
It could very well be that I'm giving them too much credit for some of the dialogue.
And that's fine. If you're just enjoying the scene, you know, it's kind of easy to get caught up in that and not let your brain completely click over into that analysis mode. Also, in case you guys, I'm certain you guys will hear this in the recording, but that sound you heard off in the distance was the sound of a train going by. When it's this time of night and the trains are going by, they really, really lay onto that horn to make sure no one's trying to, you know, cross the tracks, even though the things are down. And I did not think that it was ever going to stop. It feels like it was going for like two solid minutes. So hopefully it's not too bad when you're listening to this, but could you hear it?
I could hear it slightly. I used to live, I mean, technically I live by the CTA in Chicago now, but I used to live fairly close to like commercial train tracks.
Yeah.
So I know this sound pretty well. So it didn't bother me too much. It was just kind of a faithful out in the distance sort of thing. Yeah. I mean, at least like I'm by the alley of my building, and at least it's at the time of night that no one's like shouting. Because we had that, I think, on Sunday, where I was just like, okay, there's no reason for people to be yelling at each other that loud.
Yeah.
In public.
Well, there was one day I was recording and like somebody like started riding up and down my street, like on a dirt bike or something. And I'm just like the loudest dirt bike I've ever heard. And I was like, well, guys, you can clearly hear that dirt bike in the distance. But I was like, you know, I take things like that and go like, hey, this just goes to show that we are real people in the real world. We're not just some faceless voice out on the internet. It's like, hey, we're real people who are having to deal with real dirt bikes and trains going by.
Real dirt bikes. But yeah, so I will say, I think that my thing with a lot of the dialogue on the show is that I give them a lot of leeway because of the show's like whole aesthetic and the fact that it's a very silly show on the CW.
But that's the thing, when they do stuff really that goes really well, like when we were sitting here watching it, there was parts where the dialogue I was kind of like rolling my eyes at stuff or just kind of going like me at people talking, you know. Then when they have a scene where it's really intense and it's well written and delivered well, you go like, oh man, put this much effort into the whole thing. I see how good you guys can be, which is the kind I'm a broken record on this, but that's like the thing that always jumps back to me is that like we have seen how truly good, if not great, this show can be, which is why it makes it frustrating when things are not as good. Like that scene with, I mean, and I'm jumping ahead a little bit, but that scene where Alex and Maggie are talking alone via the, you know, Skype or whatever. Terrorist.
Evil Skype.
Yeah, evil Skype. During that scene, and then that scene where Maggie, you know, right toward the end where Maggie is yelling at Supergirl, you know, and it's like so emotional. And I was like, man, this is really well done. I was like, this is like the emotion of this is... The power of the emotion of this is genuinely affecting me. Like I really feel in, you know, even if it's just for in that like little moment, you go like, man, this is well done. And I think that's the kind of thing that makes those moments, that makes it harder for me to give some of those other moments leeway, because I'm going like, I know how good you guys can be. Keep being, just be good all the time. Which is maybe asking for too much from a show that they have to like keep just cranking out. But I feel like all the characters and the people that are working on this show, I feel like they you know, when you see them shine through in those moments and it's clear how good they can be, you go like, oh, you deserve for the whole show to be this good. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I do know what you mean. So we haven't talked about the villain yet.
I've already completely forgotten his name.
I know. So I will say this. I thought it was very clever that they basically pulled a subplot from like the third episode of the whole series. Like yes. This tiny backstory. I was like, oh, this is really smart.
Yes, absolutely.
Because we haven't seen a lot that's actually pulled from season one. And it always kind of bugs me when there's like a massive change like this, either like in comics when it goes from like a creative team and suddenly they don't really reference back stuff that happened technically within like a year, but it's because it was written by someone else and they don't, and like the new don't care as much. Yeah. And for this one, you know, I think that the writing staff hasn't changed too much between season one and season two. There's still this sense of like stuff that happened during the CBS season isn't as referenced a super yeah. whole a lot. Like, you know, how well, Lois's sister because was on the show and
yeah. I'm sure it's because some of that stuff they're just going like, we probably have to pay someone if we use that shot. You know, because you see some actor or actress in the background where it's like, oh, then that's a whole thing.
Yeah, but so I really like the fact that, and I have up the cast list. So the character's name is Rick Malvern.
Okay.
And
I knew it was something like that.
He is apparently a long, like a deep cut for Supergirl mythos. He was apparently a friend of hers in the orphanage, like pre-crisis.
Oh, wow.
And who okay. died of cancer. And then like when he came back.
Oh
yeah.
Okay. Oh wow. Okay.
So he was basically a completely different character and then he died. Yeah. But I was looking this up because someone had said like, oh yeah, you want to know who the like bad guy in this episode was? Like he's from the comics. And I was like, oh, is he like a mastermind? Nope, he's just like a random guy around Kara's age.
I thought that name seemed like, well, the fact that they were like really gave him like, they, you know, they said his first and last name a couple times. I was like, something about that name seems too specific, or like it's stuck somewhere in the back of my mind, but it was like not memorable enough for me to like really remember it.
Yeah.
But now I remember that name from when I was doing the research on Supergirl for the comics, everybody about her that I did for Comics Alliance, which you guys are welcome to go have
yeah,
a look
please,
at.
Go look.
Now I remember why that name sounds familiar.
Okay, I mean, yeah, so the three Rick Malvern fans out there must be furious that they've totally
ruined his character.
I mean, I feel more bad for the who was it? The Jason in the New 52. Crap. I don't know how many, because I just remembered that you bleeped out the swearing in the first one. So you got a little, you're gonna have some fun there.
It's okay. I've got the bleeping the you know, the bleeping protocol down.
Who was it? There was a cop named Jason in the Batman, like Batman Batgirl mythos, like, or canon. Then in the New 52, he ended up being a minor bad guy during Batman Eternal. Spoilers for like a 3-year-old event.
a thing that's probably not even canon anymore.
It's vague. I actually really like that series, but I can't think of what the
man, I'm completely blanking on anything for that. Oh well. We'll either find out. Someone will know.
Jason Bard oh, okay. Where he was brought in. They're like, hey, Jason Bard's back. And then he ended up working for the villain and being kind of shady. So I feel worse for the Jason Bard fans out there than for the like three Rick Malvern fans who feel slighted by this. But yeah, so he, and I like the fact that that while they don't let us know who it is yet, that they, Alex says, like, I recognize you, you jerk. And then it made total sense, like, in the moment for her to not say, you're Rick Malvern.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
why would she tell the guy who kidnapped her who he is?
It's like, yeah, he knows who he is.
Yeah. But I like the fact that she had that moment. And then as soon as she sees Kara, she's like, it's Rick. And she's like, I know. I'm standing literally right next to him.
Oh, man. Can I please? I just have to say, like, the one thing that I think really bothered me in this episode was that part where she's that first time where she's found his, you know, his old house at where he's got the setup, which also this guy really seems to get around pretty well. Like I could nitpick and, you know, try to like ask for some logic in how quickly this guy gets around and pulls all this stuff off, but I'll just leave it be.
I mean, I literally over the weekend I saw The Fate of the Furious and yes. there's a lot of it's a really good series, but there's a lot of
yeah getting from here and they're like, all right, we're going to Russia, all right, we're going to wherever, and they're just like yeah. bouncing from
the
place,
villain
yeah.
and the villain knowing exactly what yeah. how to set up the chess piece and like knowing yeah. that it was going to be perfect. It was like the perfect timing for him to walk through the door to yeah. have his grand villain entrance, that sort of thing. Like some of this you got to take with like the heaviest grain of salt you can.
Yeah, but my where I place, I've got different expectations for Fast and the Furious movies than I do for Superman.
just a few.
It's like a slightly different scale that I judge Fast and the Furious on. But the part when so they're talking, and then Rick goes, "All right, that's enough," and he like you know kind of pushes Kara like a little bit out of the way to or Kara, Supergirl. I keep wanting to just call her Supergirl because like that way there's no chance I'm going to mess that up. But, you know, he kind of like pushes her away from the keyboard a little bit to like turn it off or whatever. And I was like, as if this guy could push Supergirl out of the way, like she could just go, no, I think I'm going to talk to her a little longer.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like that, that bugged the bejesus out of me. Like, you can't just scoot her out of the way. He didn't even push. It's like she didn't even try to stop him. He just kind of, like, scooted her out of the way and was like, all right, let me just do this, and now you can't talk to her anymore. And
yeah, I'm not going to try to defend that, so that's fine.
Yeah, you don't have to. Yeah. I'm just like, it's just... I just want to say in our public forum.
The thinnest thread would be like, she's in shock, but it's like, yeah, there's no...
That's also like, she's kind of used to dealing with this kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, I just had to get it off my chest.
There's also, once he gets taken in, there's the whole bit where I give them credit for having Jean's transformation powers yeah. actually be used, because I'm like, good, yes, please use
finally.
That. But also it's like, I can't read his mind because he's blocking it by training.
Yeah, but exactly.
I trained for a long time by doing all of this stuff.
He was like,
we're not going to explain how.
Yeah. Again, that's one of those things we could just hand wave. But the whole time he was talking to him, I was just sitting there screaming like, you've got a telepath. And you've just mentioned earlier in the episode that you reminded us that he can read minds because he read the dad's mind. And then it's like, why isn't he? And then the guy just says, the only thing the guy says is, you think I wasn't ready for you? And it's like, where exactly do you learn how to not have your mind read by a Martian? Like, where is that book that you can check out? Because I'd like to check it out just in case.
Yeah, that feels like something that we should all be prepared for.
Also, in that scene, there was the only other sort of nitpicky thing was in that scene, his handcuffs. Like, he has handcuffs on and then they disappear so he can look at his watch and then they're back on him. Like from shot to shot.
He was prepared, Chris.
But then why did he put them back on?
So we find out that while he and his dad don't have the same last name, that there was a whole thing where his mother was abusive and his dad, who was like in and out of prison, I guess, but came back for him. But because...
I don't think his dad was in and out of prison yet. I think it was that
he was just shady,
you know,
or
yeah, he was just he was a criminal. He just hadn't yeah. got put in prison yet, and his mom was trying to keep him away. But it's also like, if this is the kind of mom that is like that abusive, in my experience with crappy people, it would seem like she would welcome the chance for someone to come get rid of him, you know?
Yeah, I don't know. There's a lot.
Unless there. It's just to be spiteful, you know, in which case, yeah, that works.
There's a lot that was told and not shown to us. So I was wondering if we were going to find out that none of this was true, but it seemed, they seemed to they ended it though, where it
I think it was definitely true. And I was like, which was great because I go, oh man, you're really kind of, I think you have to accept that it was all true because then that's why Supergirl's speech to the dad at the end
works.
Yeah.
By the way, I spent the entire episode being like, that guy looks familiar.
Uh-oh, where's he from?
So, and it took me an hour, and then it hit my brain. He is Mitchum Huntsberger on Gilmore Girls.
Oh, okay. A show I have seen zero episodes
okay.
of.
Okay, so he plays, so the last love interest for Rory in the main season, who I don't like, he's a very controversial character. Some people genuinely liked him as a love interest, some people liked him as a character, but didn't think he was a very good boyfriend. I was mostly just, like, really frustrated with him, even more so than Mon-El. Like, Mon-El actually has, which... But also, like, Logan stuck around for longer than
I hope
than
that we can. I want us to do like a recurring thing in these episodes where, like, find, you know, problematic romantic partners on other TV shows that you are bothered by more than Mon-El.
And the thing is, I've rewatched Gilmore Girls a few times, especially since
the new season.
The new season. Yeah, we watched it quite a bit in the run up to that. And so I'm like, ugh, I can kind of see the reason for that character. But anyway, so his dad is just the biggest piece of work. It's too much to get into, but it's like this rich guy and his whole family is really crappy to the Gilmores, and there's like a whole big thing. And then later on, he tries to take credit for something, like for like molding Rory in like her career path in a way that he didn't really do at all. But he shows up though in the newest season, like for one scene, and it is like delightful because his character is just like such a piece of work. So I was like, where do I recognize that like smarmy smile, like that overconfident smile and stuff? I was like, I recognize this character actor, but I cannot think of it. And it finally hit me like an hour after I saw it. And I think I shouted it. And then my partner who has seen both show, like saw this episode, but also was getting into Gilmore Girls with me, like audibly gasped in a way that I almost thought was him making fun of me. And it turns out, no, he was just shocked that he didn't recognize it either. Yeah. So that was a fun moment for me. But I was really excited to see him on the show because he did a good job with this. But it was just weird because of the way the character was written, you weren't quite sure. I was still wondering if there was going to be a Law and Order twist. specifically Law and Order Criminal Intent, which played this card a lot, where it was like a character where they had to trick another character into revealing to the actual like criminal that everything that they told them that was motivation for their crime was a lie or something. This happened on like multiple episodes of Criminal Intent.
I think that Supergirl is like a little more forthright than that, you know?
Yeah.
I appreciated that they made this guy like you go, okay, he's doing, but that part where he said, he's like, I don't want to hurt Alex. He's like, I just want my dad out. He's like, if you just get him out, she can go home. Everybody can be fine. And it's like, he says that part after he has said the whole thing about what his childhood was like and whatever. And then when he says that, I go, man, you know what? I believe him. It's like, he wants his dad out. And it's like, this is the only way he sees that he can do it. But I've got to say, if you can plan out something this complicated that involves like dealing with Martians and Supergirl and all this stuff, then it's like, I feel like just breaking someone out of a prison would be
plan A.
Yeah. Like, unless like, you know, this is actually plan D and it's just, you know, plans A through A, B and C have already fallen through and they were like more just straightforward jailbreak attempts, which I'm sure then the writers could go like they could say like, oh, yeah, that's what happened. Yeah. But
he also couldn't tell his dad about it because
he knew that they would come.
And then John would have read his mind.
But how did? Oh, okay. Let's not worry about those kind
because,
of.
And he seemed genuinely surprised that Maggie was breaking him out for his son. Because when he said like for your son, and he looked confused, like. So I had the sense that he had no idea why they were coming to see him. Yeah. Like his whole like feigning ignorance thing was actually like, I don't. Like, I just think it's amusing that you're coming to see me because like, why the hell are you coming to see me? And no, I'm not going to tell you anything because I don't have to. It was really interesting. But yeah, it was cool that they brought back this like random kid character.
That was such a great touch to go like, oh yeah, it's not someone like you have someone. And it's exactly right, because it's like if I had seen something like what happened with Kara in that first season, you know, flashback, if I had seen something like that as a kid, it absolutely would have like, I never would have forgotten it.
And it's like so the way easy for people to like, I mean, it's part of the Silver Age and like Golden Age that people ignored really weird things.
Yeah.
About Clark, but also about Supergirl's, like, what was Supergirl's alter ego before she was really Kara? I know that she's had a few names, but
in the comics?
Yeah.
She's been she's been Linda Danvers.
Right.
She's been Linda Lee. She's been Matrix. She's been,
Yeah, I mean, she had Kent as the last name at some point, too, but I can't remember what her.
Well, I can't.
By the way, comics are confusing. I'm not saying
well, especially these characters that have been around for, like, 60, 70 years, and they've just, you know.
And, like, also specifically, like, Supergirl, where they just make up random stuff for her, and then they kill her off, and it's like, oh, new universe, she's a robot?
Yeah,
she's another alien.
The comics everybody I did on her, I think, is an especially good one because she is a character that has had so many sort of, you know, different iterations and different sort of reboots, basically.
I mean, the first Supergirl, if I recall, was actually an android from another dimension that Jimmy brought over because he thought Superman needed someone to love him.
Yeah, well, there was actually one before that one. That was I need to go back and reread the thing. Cause I covered all this in that comics, everybody, which I guess I will definitely put the link to that in the show notes.
Again, I feel like I'm keep coming up with other potential like side episode things, but we could totally talk about the weird, all the different versions of
Supergirl.
Like, yeah.
Oh yeah. That'd be great.
And you'd have to, like, send me some, like, maybe, like, we could just hash out some of it, and you can, like, send me, like, references as we go. Because I know some, but obviously, like, this is very complicated, wormy.
Oh, absolutely.
Like, there are a lot of moving parts when it comes to, like, that, and, like, Wonder Girl's backstory, and, a few other.
Yeah.
Yeah, anyway.
Those are both nightmares.
But going back to the backstory of this particular Kara, I thought it was so smart because they had this kind of tiny little scene from the first season, and they were able to reuse it in this one, but in a way that didn't feel like they were just reusing footage.
Yeah, no, you totally buy it. Or I did, at least. I think you did it as well.
Yeah, well, and it's so nice to not have like a, oh, this guy that we've never seen the girls talk about before, or that we never, like, it was really nice to have it have a sense of place, I guess, instead of just like, as you know, this is a boy from my high school that we never saw in any backstory and stuff. I think this was something that they clearly came up with for the season, but it feels like it was placed. You know what I mean? Yeah. So it feels a little extra clever. And I also like the fact that he ended up, I mean, the interesting thing is that usually when there's something like this, it's, especially when there are law enforcement people involved, I don't think any of the people that he went after in this episode actually were involved with his dad getting arrested. It's just like, no, I just know that you can break him out, so I'm going to make you break him out.
Oh, yeah, he doesn't have, like, a vendetta against anyone. He's like, he knows his dad did bad stuff. He's just like, but I still want to get him out of prison. I want to save him like he saved me. And you go, yeah, this guy's not a bad guy. I mean, he's doing a bad thing, but that's kind of part of the point of the episode is that, you know, wanting to help someone you love can make you do things you normally wouldn't.
Yeah, I do think that there is something... Some of the, like, clues he left were, like, four. And there were a few, like, snide things he said where some of it is me really wondering how much of him not getting with Alex as a kid might have actually added to it.
Nah, I didn't see any of that. I mean, like, I'm not saying that that's not a possible read on it. I'm just saying, like, oh, I did not take it
there,
like that
there
at
was
all.
There was a bit here and there.
Some of those snidey things, yeah, were kind of like, well, that's kind of a dick move. But like...
And I mean, he was going to murder... I don't want to give him too much credit because he did... He was like, no, she will drown. And she did almost drown. So like, when Alex... the point I'm getting to is that when Alex punches him in the face... at the end of this, I feel like she is very justified.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, it's like he did a... totally awful thing, even if you're doing something with a good, you know, with good reason, you know, with like honorable intentions, a bad thing is still a bad thing.
Yeah.
And it's like, also, I've got to think that Maggie would be seriously in trouble for this after, you know, and it's like, and also it's like, so they erased his memory. So did he end up not going to jail or is he just going to be in jail and have no idea why? I'm left with some questions. As far as I feel like Maggie would definitely be in trouble. And that guy would definitely, I was like, well, he's still going to end up having to go to jail anyway. Then I was like, oh, but they erased his memory. Maybe they just took all of that stuff out and are just like, all right, let this guy go about his business.
Yeah,
but
no,
that
I'm
seems,
wondering. Yeah.
We need a little closure, then, like, Supergirl writers. Tell us what happened to old Rick Malvern.
Well, you know, they brought him back once. Maybe they'll bring him back again. It is one of those things too, like, okay, if he has these memories erased, will he get the same idea at some point?
Well, I'm assuming that they're saying that John just completely wipes all of that out.
I don't, maybe, but like...
Like he takes just that specific memory of seeing that happen with Kara. Like, not like his whole memory of their entire childhood. I just imagine he'd wipe out this idea with this plan and sort of what had happened in the last, you know, however many, 38 hours, 48 hours or whatever, and then go like, also, could you make it so he doesn't remember seeing me not get blown up by that car?
Yeah. So I'm trying to think what else, because I know we've jumped around.
I think we hit all the high points. We really liked this episode. I think this was a very strong episode. And we've still got the...
I did want to say that Alex ripping out her tracker and then going, this sucks, was one of the most genuine things I've ever seen on this show. Because, like, yes, that's a reaction someone would have to just taking a shard of a piece of technology, ripping out the tracker that's in your arm. Like, this sucks felt like the perfect note of, like, really good writing. And also really good reaction from the actress.
Yeah. That reminds me. I just remembered something I wanted to talk about from that scene. Not that scene, but while she's trapped in that thing and that part where it starts filling up with water and she takes her pants off to...
I know, because I've had...
That is a real thing from the Boy Scout handbook.
Yeah, I was not a Boy Scout, but I had a lifeguard training. That was one of the... was definitely one of the things that they taught in terms of, like, in danger situations. And I had completely forgotten it in the back of my brain. And then when I saw it, I was like, oh, yeah, that's a thing. So, yeah, I thought that was, again, there were, like, super clever moments. They got to have her do actually stuff that not only in the moment made sense for her to do as someone who's trained in this, but also actually helped save her life.
Well, yeah, and the fact that she never, like, she doesn't ever just become, like, a damsel in distress. She keeps, like, trying to figure out, she never stops thinking and like trying to figure out, okay, what can I do to get out of this? What can I do to like try to help? Or what can I do? You know, she's, I like that they, even though they've put her in a situation where it's like, you know, a bad situation, she never stops being as competent as she is supposed to be.
Yeah.
And, you know, she, as much of a, you know, just a cool character who is like, yeah, even though you've got me in this bad situation, I'm not going to just sit around and like hope that my sister or my girlfriend or somebody saves me. It's like, all right, I'm going to try to do this and I'm going to try to do this. And it's cool. I like that. Also, I've realized that if you guys are ever any of, you know, this goes for you, Katie, or for any of our listeners, if you ever do become really good friends with someone from Krypton, and they, you know, and it's the kind of thing where you're good enough friends where then you are possibly able to be used as like a bargaining chip, as a hostage somewhere hidden away, you need to beforehand, like as soon as you start to get really good friends with that person from Krypton, you need to go ahead and plan on what's going to happen when you get kidnapped. And you guys need to...
I like that it's just Krypton, though, not like superheroes in general.
Well, I'm saying with someone who's got all of the powers of a Kryptonian, you know, that like suite of powers, because what I'm going to say only basically works for if you're dealing with someone on that level. It's like if you're best friends with Spider-Man, this is not going to make a difference.
Well, but yeah, you're screwed. If you're best friends with, you will either die or you'll become a supervillain, because that's the only two options you have. Sorry, absolutely. Go on.
Yeah. So what you guys need to do, and hopefully you're writing this down because it's very important. What you need to do is go ahead and prepare for when you get kidnapped. You have a song that you are going to just sing over and over that your Kryptonian friend can then listen for, because they will be able to pick that out way more than if you're just like yelling for help or something like that. There's a lot of but if you've got a song that you just keep singing, and they can try to like hone in on that when they're using, they're trying to filter through with their super abilities, hearing specifically, that really will help you out a lot in the long run. And it's not the kind of thing that a bad guy is going to know necessarily what you're doing, unless you tell them that's what you're doing. Of course, though, if the bad guy has you like tied up with something in your mouth, then it doesn't work. But
yeah, I feel like we're actually giving more advice to supervillains at this point.
Oh, crap.
No.
Damn. Okay. Nobody. No, there's no supervillains listening to this. We only have
taking really, notes.
Yeah. We only have like really good people as listeners.
Yeah. So the other thing I was going to mention, because this might be the only time that we talk about Maggie and Alex for the rest of the season. And
it was something. It won't be. But
maybe not. Yeah, I mean, maybe not. But because they were such a prominent part of this, because we both really liked what they've done throughout the season. And also in this episode in particular, you mentioned the scene where they talked about where Maggie talks about how I want more firsts. I want all of this. Let's our dog. What should the dog's name be? Which all feels really, really sweet. And the scene afterwards where Alex is talking to her as she's resting up, and she says, "You didn't let me finish what I was going to say." And which I felt like, again, was really good, because so often when it's a life or death moment, then that doesn't come back. And it's supposed to be a moment of tension that like, oh, that never gets said. And I like that Alex is very direct and like, no, I do want to say this.
What did she say?
I think it was mostly, I mean, it got down to like, I love you. Like they both say, I love you to each other. And I don't know if they've said that to each other yet.
Oh, they haven't. Yeah. That was like a big deal. Like,
and I kind of thought that's what was going, like when she said, I have something to tell you, I'm like, oh yeah, they haven't said I love you yet. Which again feels like it was very well developed that they waited until like a really good episode.
Yeah.
Very late down the line for them to actually say it.
Even though in their, what I imagine their actual relationship is like, it seems like maybe a little weird that they wouldn't have already said that, but
maybe, but it,
maybe I'm just too,
I'll give him a,
I'm, yeah. I mean, I can't speak for other people. I am just a, maybe I am just a mushy person.
Yeah. I'm the same way, but I also feel like, oh, they're both kind of like, it's Alex's first relationship with a woman, so maybe she's a little more tentative, and they both have those closed off parts that they're working on, so maybe it just, the words hadn't been said. I'm kind of chalking it up to that. But yeah. But I like the fact that it on page, on screen, they actually said it. But I did want to point out that in between, and during the Christmas break, there was a really good piece done by the Nerds of Color, which is at thenerdsofcolor.org, and I think we could probably link it to...
Yeah, we'll put the link in there in the show notes.
That points out that the actress who plays Maggie, while they've said on... Well, they said in PR, and I think that she's Latina, that Maggie is Latina, and in the show they've specifically called her a woman of color, that the actress is actually not Latina, but is... in the Italian, English, Irish, and German, but like,
yeah,
but a mixture of those ethnicities. So both Chris and I are white, and we say this because I think, like I said, that Nerds of Color post does a really good job breaking down not why this is a problem, not just for the show, but also how it's a systemic problem in Hollywood movies and in shows in general. Before the season was over, we hadn't mentioned the recaps really, but I wanted to point to that because we talk about the criticisms of the show and where the show needs to be better. And again, this blog post makes a really good argument for where the show needs to be better in terms of representing women of color. So this, like I said, I don't know if I have anything to add to it. I just wanted to
Something worth mentioning. Yeah. I mean, because we do sort of throughout this, we have kind of talked about some of the larger things happening in the, you know, in the world of the show beyond just the fictional reality. And so it's like, you can't really, when it's something that is clearly something that's, it's definitely like, this is a big deal to, you know, to some viewers. Some people are like, well, you know, I just want to watch the show and I'm not worried about that. And, you know, you go, okay, well, that's fine. But, you know, there are people who like feel kind of lied to by this and, you know, the way that it was presented to them. And you can't discount how those people feel because of the way that the character was marketed. And we talked, Katie and I talked about this a little bit off the air about, you know, sort of like a scenario where this could have happened and be like, oh, okay, well, I could kind of see how that might could happen. But we don't know, you know,
yeah.
We have no idea. But we do think that this is, I mean, well, I'll say that so that I don't accidentally speak for you and then you go like, whoa, 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 whoa. I think that this is clearly a show and, you know, made by a group of people who really do want to do the best they can to try to be a source of like hope and positivity for everybody, but especially for people who are underrepresented and who feel like in some of the ways things are right now in the current climate of, you know, like the things with our country, people who are feeling like they're being marginalized or trying to be marginal, you know, that they're trying to be treated like their value is not equal, which is completely wrong. You know, I think the show definitely does want to is trying. I think this is a show made by a group of people who clearly have, you know, their hearts are in the right place. So it's like we said about Supergirl earlier, like she can mess up and as long as she learns from it, it's okay. So hopefully in the future with this show, and there's going to be a third season, hopefully these things, when, you know, when they get called out on these things or when people mention these kind of things or have these problems, I want to believe that this show is, and the people running this show are going to go, we hear you and we understand, and we're going to try to be better. We're going to try to make this better. And, you know, obviously we don't want the actress that's playing Maggie to just like be fired, you know, cause it's not, this is not her fault, but I guess what I'm trying to say is that, I believe in the people that are making this show because of how hard they have worked on some of these things and how hard they have shown, they've proven, you know, that they're, how hard that seems like they're trying to make us go like, yeah, that like to make us feel like Supergirl, the character and the show is like someone to believe in. So, hopefully that all makes sense. And
I think it does. My feeling is similar to yours. I do think that, I think that the show, I don't want to give them too much credit, especially because like,
well, that's fair.
Because the CW superhero shows, I mean, you watch Arrow, some yeah. of the casting choices on that show
oh, boy.
With the same showrunners is pretty egregious.
But some of that stuff I think is that they go, like watching Arrow, man, I go like, I feel like they, by the time you get to, so it's like Supergirl is on Mondays, Flash is on Tuesdays, Legends is on, I don't know when, and then Arrow is on.
It jumps around.
Yeah, and then Arrow is on last in the week on Wednesday. And I always feel like they use up their like hope and enthusiasm and like try their effort earlier in the week, like with Supergirl and the Flash. And then by the time they get to Arrow, they're just like, oh, what is left? All right, then this happens, you know? And so I feel like that's why Arrow like is progressively worse than the other two shows.
So, all right, but what I'm going to say about it, again, I highly recommend people checking out the posts that were from, I know I said their name before, the Nerds of Color.
The Nerds of Color, yeah, and that'll be in the show notes, which just as a reminder, the website is keepitclosetome.com. And if you have any thoughts on this yourself that you want to share with us that then maybe we can talk about on a future episode, email them to, oh Lord, what is the email address? I think it's keepitclosetomepodcast@gmail.com and just put Supergirl Gab in the subject line.
And yeah, and I'm going to end this, this bit just saying that like it's important. No, like I want to say like this topic, but that made me sound like I'm closing the case or something.
Yeah, no, we know what you mean.
Yeah,
we know what you mean.
That as someone who very recently was like a critic of pop culture and pop culture critic, and in many ways I'm continuing it with podcasts and such. This discussion and like this criticism, even harsh criticism, is really important, and so. Even when it shows that we really love, when people are voicing things, even that we didn't recognize as being a problem, like that's all really important. That's how we got Alex coming out, because people pointed out that there was that the queer yeah. representation was zilch on the show. And even for, I mean, even if we were talking about a show where the showrunners were seemed less open to listening to people's criticism, this criticism would still be important. And so I'm really glad that that the Nerds of Color wrote about this, and I really, yeah, I'm of the belief that criticism is a really important aspect to engaging with the content, which is why we talk so much about what we liked and didn't like about episodes, because we think that it's important to point out where the flaws are too. So right. Yeah, that's why I wanted to make sure that we mention it, just because I know that Chris and I are really big about talking about the show, not just about what we really love about it, but the show as a whole, even where it falters. So yeah. That's where yeah. I am with it.
I thought you were gonna say, and of course, because Chris and I are both really white.
That too. And that's why, like, I don't feel super, I wanted to point it out mostly also because, like I said, the writer of it, and I want to make sure, Where is, I know I'm trying to find where the byline for this, for the piece was, but they might not have had one. Yeah, I can't find the byline for, oh wait, oh, it's Desiree Rodriguez, who actually is someone I know on Twitter, so I didn't realize.
Oh, well, there you go.
She's works with Women Write About Comics as well, and I think she's doing some comic editing, but don't quote me on that.
Yeah.
But no, she's super smart. So this makes total sense.
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, you read
about it.
Yeah. You read that article. It's clear.
I didn't realize that it was her. I just knew the piece from the post. But she went into really good depth in the piece, and I think that her point of view on it is really important. So yeah, definitely check that out.
Well, and it's like, if you have a strong appeal, you know, like a strong feeling or opinion about this already, you may have already read it, or if you haven't, it's definitely worth reading. But if you feel like you don't have a strong opinion about this, I think it's also worth reading, because you know, even if you're not thinking about it in, any kind of negative way, maybe it'll kind of just open you up a little bit to someone else's way of thinking, you know, and it's always good to kind of try to broaden your horizons and see what, you know, sort of like what the world's like and from somebody else's shoes. I think that's, it's like I've said, I said in some of the old written recaps, I would complain about like, oh, I don't really care about all this romance stuff. I'd rather just kind of see blah, blah, blah. But then, you know, when you hear other people talk about why seeing some of these romance scenes are important to them, you go, oh, okay, that actually makes a lot of sense. And like, you know, this, I'm not the only person watching this. So yeah, it's good to hear other people, what people think on things, and maybe it will just validate how you feel, or maybe it will completely give you something interesting to think about.
Yeah.
But I think this has been a pretty good episode of the show.
Yeah,
this has been a pretty good episode of our show.
Yeah, we're once again...
We've gone way too long once again.
Oh my
again.
Gosh, we're going to get there at
it's
some
okay.
point.
I think that this has all been a super enjoyable conversation, though. Katie, do you have any closing thoughts about this episode?
I'm very interested to see where it's going to go from here. Apparently we have actually three episodes, even though it might be like a 2 hour long finale.
Oh, okay.
I don't know, but it was very vague because I thought online they said that there were only two episodes left, and then it ended with like three episodes to go. I'm like, oh, okay. That's
maybe not.
Maybe
yeah. Maybe
not.
Two of those are going to be on the same night.
That's what I'm thinking. That's if I had to guess, they're probably going to do like a two hour long epic.
Oh, so I will put all this stuff in the show notes, but Katie, tell everyone where to follow you.
You can follow me on Twitter at just plain tweets. I have a Patreon at patreon.com/justplainsomething, as well as I do a podcast and web series with my partner over on justplainsomething.com, and my book Moonlighters about adorable werewolves in college is out now on Comixology.
So check all those things out, and like I said, the links to all of those are definitely in the show notes. You can follow me on Twitter at @TheChrisHaley, follow the show at @KICTMPodcast. Email the show at keepitclosetomepodcast@gmail.com. Goodness, what else? Surely there's... Oh, I've got a Patreon. Patreon.com/TheChrisHaley. All that stuff's in there in the show notes too. And by all means, thank you so much for all of the people who are retweeting our stuff about the first episode. Please continue to do that if you enjoy the show, because it is super helpful getting the word out. Yeah, I think that's just about it. Yeah, I guess we'll see you next week in National City. Everybody keep being super to each other.
All right. Bye, everybody.
Let me try to get into the appropriate headspace to talk on a program. like a real
human being.
Yeah, like a real talking on a thing person.
Guy.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm not helping. Go.